accession number 24925, reel 10.
Sorry, we're going to continue.
I was going to tell you something that happened in Japan, which was rather interesting, I thought. On one particular day, I had to take a Mustang up to about 13,000 feet to check that the supercharged blowers came in, and you know, they'd come in automatically. They'd come in with a bit of a bang, and it was quite a surprise. Anyhow, I flew up the coast to the east towards Tokyo, and when the superchargers came in at about 13,000 feet, I found I was pretty close to Fujiyama. So I thought I'd have a good look, and I flew around the around Fujiyama, which is quite beautiful. And I remember approaching it from the north to the south, and I went into the crater, dived into the crater, which is about 500 feet deep, and the base of the crater was covered with ice and snow, quite flat. And from memory, it seemed to be about a mile in circumference. And I went down and below the rim, and I remember seeing a little temple on the southern side, south, slightly western side of the rim. And I then circled Fujiyama, going around about half a dozen times, and ever widening circles. And it was quite an exhilarating experience. And I've read afterwards that it was probably a very silly thing to do, and that I read the other day where an American airliner took off from Tokyo, went down to about 15,000 feet near Fujiyama, and the winds actually tore it to pieces. It tore they're all killed, and this is due to the violent winds around Fujiyama. I must have had a look at it on a very still day. And someone said to me, well, it just shows you how lucky you were. I said, no, really, it just shows you how lucky the other fellow was. Like being torn apart. But I suppose there are all sorts of stories about Japan which I could tell you, but generally speaking, it was, I think, a year well spent.
Give us a story that really sticks out in relation to the way it shaped you as a bloke later on.
Well, I can't honestly think that anything, I can't think of anything that's shaped me as a person later on. I can remember, did I tell you when we saw the snow come along, we'd see the see where the snow was, we'd go out in Mustangs and check where the good slopes were, and then pinpoint them, then ring up the chief of police or mayor of the town and say we're coming up. About half a dozen of us would go up there by train and spend a few days skiing up there. And they were very pleasant. They looked after us well. They had no food to give us. We took our own food, and we took beer and tins of stuff, and chocolates and stuff to give them. And it was quite a warm feeling. There was no ill feeling anyway. And they showed us how to ski and how to fall over. But quite enjoyable. And there's regarding the Japanese, there was no ill feeling in any way from the Japanese towards the Australians, or anyone as far as I can gather. They seem to go out of their way to help you.
Did you have any close relationship with Japanese soldiers or
no,
Air
we,
Force men?
No, we had, of course, the whole Army, Navy and Air Force been disbanded. We had no close relationships with any Japan. The only relationships we'd have wouldn't we, if we went to a restaurant and you'd talk to Japanese, and they would speak to you in very halting English, and we'd had no Japanese at all. No, we had very little contact with the Japanese. But it was altogether a very happy time. I enjoyed it. But as I say, looking back, it would have been better spent, from my point of view, joining the airlines earlier.
What was the general feeling of the post-war era that you can recollect? Whether it be in Japan or back home
anyway.
In Australia, maybe compare the two.
Well, it was a very exciting time. No one knew what was going to happen. Of course, no one knows what's going to happen at any stage of their life. But it was all new and exciting. At least you had the marvellous feeling if you're going to fly somewhere you wouldn't be shot at, which made you feel a lot safer. Yes, and everyone was wanting to get on and build a house, and there were shortages everywhere, and there was a shortage of beer. I can remember in Melbourne, the closing time at the bars was 6 o'clock, the 6 o'clock swill, and people would rush in there after work or whatever they're doing and drink as much as they could before 6 o'clock and go home. It all seemed to be silly, really. And you couldn't buy beer, you could only get a bottle of beer here and there. There's no, everything was rationed. Bricks were rationed. Clothes were rationed. And petrol was hard to get. Mind you, it was very cheap.
You've been talking, obviously, about the Japanese experience. And then, obviously, coming back to Australia. The general view of this sort of brave new world, was that a sense that you had?
No, I've never had any sense of a brave new world. I think we all took it in our stride. It was as we realised that things were different, and you had to make a living. Of course, being in the Air Force, you're looked after and fed and clothed, and the medical needs are supplied. And it was a bit of a shock to get out there in the wide world and be on your own and have to clean your shoes and make your bed. But
had the world grown up in a way?
Well, of course, I didn't know. You know, I was growing up with it, and I didn't know if it had grown up. It was all changing. It was all different. And I think people were...
Was that a scary feeling, the way that it was different?
Well, you felt a bit... Having had 6 years in the Air Force, you felt a bit isolated in a way when you got out of the Air Force. But you soon got used to being in civilian life, and it had its joys. You know, you could you didn't have to do this and didn't have to do that. But
did you know any people that were having difficulty in relation to?
Yes, there were a lot of people. I knew several people who joined the airlines who didn't like it and went back to the Air Force. Because they said they missed the mess life of I suppose, the comradeship of the mess and the routine. There are some people, I think some people cope better than others. And I remember meeting old Nev McNamara when he was a wing commander out. I said, Nev, why don't you get into flying? Get into civilian flying. You'd love it. And he looked at me as though I'd made an improper suggestion, because he was a dedicated Air Force man, of course, and rose to become the head of the Air Force. But he was quite shocked to think that I'd even think that he wasn't going to stay in the Air Force.
I get the impression that people often find that people weren't able to relate to return airmen. To return soldiers.
Well, I there was that feeling, and I don't know whether it was really the fault of the soldiers, sailors, and airmen, or the civilians, but there was I had the sort of feeling that there could have been not a jealousy so much, but there was a feeling that. There was a different feeling. People who hadn't been away and fought in the war, I think, were somehow different to the people who had. And there was a feeling of, probably on their part, a feeling of inadequacy. Whether this is right or wrong, I don't know. But you felt slightly different. Having been away and been on operations and done all sorts of things to people who hadn't. And I think later on in the civilian flying, there's a lot of that went on. Of course, I think really in any big business, any big venture, any big company, there's always a certain amount of jealousies and backbiting goes on. I think you have to expect that. So anyhow, all in all, it was quite good. And I stayed with the airlines until I had to retire. And I got out when I had a heart attack about 6 months before I was due to retire. So that was the finish of my flying days.
Did you have any flashbacks at all whilst flying, for instance, to the war years?
Well, it's something that really you'd like to forget, but you can't forget it. It was a very formative part of your life, I think, those early days, the years between, say, 18 and 24. And it stays with you. The things that you wouldn't consider doing, and things that you, loyalties, or we used to smoke cigarettes and a pipe and drink beer, and in India we drank nothing but gin, but there's never any thought of it taking any sort of illegal drugs. We just didn't do it. That's all there is to it.
But in relation to your flying years that were to follow the war, did you go back when, for instance, flying civilian airlines to the war years, do you think?
In what way? In flying? Of course, the civilian flying is completely different to the flying I did during the war, which is all low level and ground strafing, and you had to fly straight and level, but of course people used to say, don't you get bored flying an airliner? Well, there are times when there's in absolutely clear, beautiful weather, you enjoy it. And then I've never known a pilot in my life who could say that he was really bored flying through a thunderstorm. It always keeps you on your toes a bit. And because you of the unexpected, I've lost a few engines in the civilian flight. I finished up with about 25,000 hours flying, and I've had a few engine failures and a few. Of course, really, the main thing about civilian flying is to keep it safe and secure. Look after your passengers and see the mail get through.
What have you taken from your experience during the war to your civilian flying?
Well, I suppose that a certain amount of there's a certain amount of responsibility in taking commanding an aircraft, and you'd had that flying in the war, but I think that all your general experience you take with you all your life, and then that applies to everyone in any walk of life, really. And I think that the flying I did during the war was a great asset to me at flying in peacetime.
People talk of the education that they get in relation to being a better person.
Well, I don't know about that.
Sort of the human experience of it all.
Well, it could be. I can remember thinking that coming back from the war, saying to myself, well, what I really have learned is that we're Australians are no different to anyone else in the world. You get good Australians and bad Australians, and we're all equal. You know, we all enjoy life the same way. We enjoy the same things and hate the bad things. And I don't think you could really put a pin between a Japanese, a Frenchman, and an Australian. They all seem to be. They all have their good points.
In relation to the First World War, it being a war to end all wars, what then was the second in your war?
Well, I never thought it was a war to end all wars. I think it's in human nature too. I don't think we'll ever cease having wars. I'd like to think we will never have another war. But I'm looking at history. I can't see it happening. There'll always be some conflict or other, apart from and there won't be an atomic warfare, because if there is, it'll be the end of the world. It'll be the end of civilization. Well, who knows, that might happen. But
looking at the current situation, has anything really changed? What did the Second World War achieve?
I don't know. I think I can't say that it's ever... Well, what it achieved, it stopped Hitler. It then stopped the Japanese from... dominating Asia. But I think economically they did just that. Anyhow, they're very hard workers. They apply themselves to anything they do to the utmost. And I think anyone who works as hard as that usually gets on very well. They have the ability to work hard. They laugh. They tell funny stories. I think their sense of humour is a little different to ours. But generally speaking, I like the Japanese. I've spoken to people who hate them with a deep hate. But I've never spoken to anyone who's actually been in combat with them, who really hates them that much.
I'm interested, coming to the end of our interview, if a small boy listened to your tapes in 200 years' time, didn't know who you and I were, what would you hope he got out of it from listening to your story?
Well, I think he'd probably hope that he'd probably realise that things haven't changed much in the last 200 years. I think he'd say that what happened then will happen again. And the human nature probably hasn't changed one iota. And that they laughed and they talked and they died. And they're just the same as we are now. That's what I think he'll say. Who knows? That's what I hope he'll say.
Would you like to finish the interview?
Yeah.
Thank you very much for all your help, Don.
Good. Great.